brewing is as much about the process as it is about the product. At its most satisfying, brewing creates a culture and a community that goes beyond beer geekdom to make deeper connections. It's about learning, sharing, and creating. It's a touchstone that can make people who've never met instantly friends. Beer with Strangers starts now.
Welcome to episode 92 of Beer with Strangers. I'm your host, Tony Russo, and I'm joined this week, as I'm joined each week, by Doug Griffith. How you doing?
Doing fine, Tony. And I'll start out with the weather report. Biggest thing today is windy.
Crazy windy out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was I've got those headphones that like beam your phone into your head. Uh-huh. You know, there's no wire or whatever. And when it's windy, it doesn't work. It's like the wind is blowing
too noisy.
The waves. Yeah. No, the wind blows the waves. It cuts in and out. So that's how windy it is today. It's so windy the radio waves are moving.
Wow. But it's a beautiful day out, but it's just very windy. So nice temperature.
Yeah, we dodged a bullet because it was supposed to get cold, and I worried about my fig trees. And
it was cold. Yesterday morning was 30 degrees, and this morning was 50 degrees.
So. Yeah, but we didn't get a bad frost. We just got a light frost. And they're still alive. The point is they're still alive, and that makes me happy because I was nervous.
Did you cover them?
No. I only promise to cover them. I don't actually cover them. I feel like if the weather gods know that I'm going to cover them, then they won't bother sending a killing frost because they're like, be a waste of our time. But anyway, so far they're alive. I've got 2, 6, 7 trees. So, and hopefully I'll make more this year, and I'll just start a fig tree grove in Delmar, the Delmar fig tree grove. All sorts of fun this week. Just real quick, we want to debut or at least mention that we already have debuted an extra podcast. We're calling them sub-podcasts from now or podcast extras. I don't know what we're going to call them. But I get a chance to interview a lot of brewers, and I can't always get them to call in on our show. Or sometimes I do get them to call in, but then I screw it up and I can't get them live on the air. It's a mess. So what I've decided to do is I have an apparatus for my phone now that I can record both sides of a conversation on my phone. And so when people are interested in coming on, I'll just do the interview and I'll put it up as a separate podcast. If you're listening now, then you already have seen it in your feed. If this is the first one you've subscribed to, if you want to go back and listen, we have one that has gone up this week with Ryan Telly, who's the marketing guy from the Fordham and Dominion Brewing Company. Each week, we're just hopefully talk to somebody else. Ideally, it will come out on Thursday, which is when we record this, and then on Friday, you know, we'll be able to mention it as well. This week, we hopefully will have Tracy from Third Wave. I recorded an interview with Tom Noor from Evo, but he was traveling and the audio was irrecoverable.
Was it windy and blowing the words away?
It was windy and blowing the words away. No, I think he was just driving and it was just usually like if you listen to this one, the one on Ryan was on speakerphone with a couple other guys and it sounds okay. The one with Tom, I just couldn't fix it. So, but I do have a great story and I guess I'll tell it now. They're coming out with a pineapple IPA and, so we talked a little bit about that, the pineapple IPA and what to expect from that, and also about their barrel aging program. And I'll do a story on that this week, and we can talk about it next week.
Boy, we've gone on to bigger and bigger IPAs, and then we're going to different flavored IPAs. So
right. Well, and that's what one of the things we talked about on this podcast is Fordham's doing a grapefruit IPA. A grapefruit pale ale. And they're calling it GPA, and they're going to have a teacher pinup. That's their that's their marketing point. So it's fun to listen to. It's not very inside baseball, but he talks a little bit about how when you're marketing things, you want to kind of tread lightly. You don't want to be gross about it because craft beer people are sensitive about being marketed at, but also you want to put your beer in a place where people will give it a try if they haven't.
Keeps it interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. And they do, they you can listen, but they do all sorts of events up there. The first Friday of every month, they have a different release party. This week, actually, they're not going to have one today when you're listening to this, if you're listening to the podcast. They didn't have one on April 1st because they have the Hop 2D2 event, which is coming up in on April. I believe it's April 23rd. But you can check the website for all of those things. So that's the podcast side of the business. But now there's also some homebrew news.
For us, yes. We're having Jesse Prawl from Rubber Soul coming on Saturday, 2:00 in the afternoon, talk about malts. So if you're interested in brewing, come listen to him.
Yeah, I've spoken with Jesse before. Now he came up through Dogfish.
Yes, I think 10+ years. So
yeah, and he's been doing great things over at Rubber Soul. I was just lucky enough to have their amber. I went to the Hoppers, the new beer garden in Salisbury. Right. And, you know, people are giving them a rough time. If you're listening to this and you're among the people giving them a rough time, just let them get on their feet a little bit. They're still they had to open earlier than they wanted to open for long, boring reasons. So they're still kind of finding their feet. So,
gee, a business that opened early? That's unusual.
Well, I'll tell you what, just because he didn't say it's not a huge deal, but their liquor license was – they were supposed to open by a certain amount of time, and if they didn't open, they would have had to reapply.
Oh, gotcha. So good reason to open.
Yeah, so they had this super soft opening, but it's a really cool concept. There's a story on the site if you want to see it. And it's such a cool concept that they got really busy right away. I mean, only two of their five restaurants are even open. Like, you know, some of them, there's still ladders and paint inside. So they got open in a hurry, and they're still finding their feet. So,
and a great variety of local beer.
Yeah, 30+.
Yeah.
That was the other thing
when for the one import.
Right. Well, we were doing the interview and he kept saying all local beer. And I'm like, I can't say that I saw the Guinness tap. If we were doing this on the phone, I could write it. But I saw the, and there's nothing wrong with Guinness.
Yeah.
So when people see that many taps, they expect to be able to have a Guinness. You know, it's Most people expect a Guinness win.
But I still think it's great that he's got that many, within 100 miles. Your 100-mile radius?
Well, just over. It's 116 miles from here to Baltimore.
Oh,
so
okay.
120 miles, we'll call it. But they have, Jailbreak and Heavy Seas. They have a bunch of the Baltimore beers. But they have all of the local beers. Every brewery is represented except for Ocean City Brewing Company and...
16 Mile in there?
And 16 Mile.
Okay.
Those were the two that weren't, I think those were the two that weren't represented, but it wasn't for lack of trying. Ocean City was supposed to be bringing a beer for them to put on, and they were still trying to get in touch with their friends at 16 Mile. So the point is, if you wanted to take a beer tour of the Eastern Shore, you totally could do it right there in Salisbury. As long as you parked within walking distance, because some of these a lot of the people are sending their bigger beers, so it's
hard to drink too much. Though.
Yeah, it's they're big beers, you get full quick. I had the Amber by Rubber Soul, and I don't recall the other one. It was just one of my regular go to beers, probably a third wave.
Do they offer flights?
No, pints.
All just all pints.
Pints. So, you know what? I didn't ask.
Oh, okay. I mean, a lot of places do offer, flights so that you can taste more than just one or two beers.
Right. Yeah. I wonder if they do. But again, like I said, they're still getting organized. No. So stay tuned. Because it's when they're up and firing on all pistons, it's going to be a lot of fun to be there. I mean, our friend from, third wave, the barbecue, is he's got a place there, and I'm so happy for him because, you know, I mean, I don't want to sound condescending about it, but you know, it's like one of those I knew him when kind of things, because he used to just have a folding table out in front of third wave
underneath a tent,
and now he's got a food truck and he's got his own restaurant, so it's just a success story. So there is that. So coming out Saturday, 2 to 4, you think?
Yes, 2 to 4.
And I'm sorry, I got lost because I was talking about how much I like Jesse's beers. They're making good beers there. I also got to speak with the guy from Revelation Brewing in Rehoboth, and they're hoping to be open by May. That's their target date. They have a production brewery. I didn't know that there was a rough section of Rehoboth Beach, but there's a tough section of Rehoboth Beach, and that's where his brewery is. And they just got approved to open in that church. But he said that's a 2017 project. And they also will probably be on tap at Hoppers because their partners own the pizza restaurant at Hoppers. Okay. Yeah, it's a funny story, and I'm going to write about it this week. But just real quick, their idea was that they were going to open a brew pub with a wood-fired oven. And just because of the way the different licenses came out and the different timelines, they had to start brewing before the restaurant was ready. So they started brewing in Rehoboth, and then they found this place in Salisbury for the pizza, and then they got the church approved. But the idea was it all was going to be in the church, and then they had all this stuff and no place to put it. But I think it's working out. I didn't have the pizza. I went to the Primo Hoagies, and I don't know if you ever had Primo Hoagies, but it was they're pretty good. I was surprised. I haven't had a lot of decent subs down here, so happy for that. Okay, here now the news. That was 10 minutes of intro. First up, we're going to talk about dressing up your kegs. There was a story this week about some home brewers who tried to get a leg up and I guess succeeded in getting a leg up in
from Brooklyn, New York.
Right, they were from Brooklyn, and they're hoping they make – is it keg holders or are those kegs themselves?
No, the way I read it, it looked like a trash can to me that they put decals on or painted up on the outside to make it look like the Star Wars R2-D2, and they were serving their beer out of it. So it's just a novel idea, and they got some good feedback, and they won the People's Choice Awards for the event that they went to. And it seems to me that they also got in somewhere in the top 10 of the actual beer itself. So they're making decent beer and served a lot of it, and people like the concept.
Yeah, well, I guess it gives you, if you wanted to do the arts and crafts thing, it does kind of give you something else to do while you're brewing. You can, while the boil's going on, you can paint your...
And if you're at an event and everybody else has just kegs and yours is in a fancy...
R2-D2.
Yep.
Or whatever. I mean, I guess any kind of...
And the four handle look really nice, so
yeah. Any kind of cylindrical object would do. We have a bunch of wine bottles here. I just want to mention them because I keep looking off at and getting distracted of them. Now, you have all this wine that you're going to bottle. I was under the impression that this was left over from your big wine party 2 weeks ago.
We've got some wines that we've made in classes, some that we've made for ourselves that I have here and I need to get bottled. But also what the push is, Sean's made some, has a friend came in and helped make some wine for their wedding. And he needs some place to put it out of the primary fermenter into the secondary, the carboys.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have any extra, not that we can't go open the box, but
right. We
keep opening boxes and I got some place to
store it. Yeah.
So the best solution is to bottle some of the wines that need to be bottled, and then we'll have carboy space.
And also as a result of that, you have all these kegs coming down now. Now, you guys sell – this is for like more advanced home brewers. They buy the whole keg.
Not necessarily more advanced, but people who want to keg their beer rather than bottling. So the you got one – the kegs are 5 gallon in size, and most home brewers make 5 gallon size batches, which comes out to 2 cases. But if you're going to – clean 2 cases of the bottles, a lot of people eventually find out that the kegs are just one vessel. You clean one thing, put your beer in it, and you can actually have it in the keg and ready to drink in about a week versus 3 weeks or 4 weeks. So,
that was the other thing I wanted to ask is, so do you keg a condition or you just add CO2 if you have a keg?
Generally, you would primary it, secondary it, and then put it in the keg. But some of the different beers, especially the Saisons, we find are real good fresh as possible. So you can brew it today and have it in the keg next week.
And just because the fermentation doesn't take as long in a keg?
Right. Well, no, there's no fermentation actually in the keg. It's just the primary fermentation for a Saison, we can actually fermented a little warmer because you get a little more fruitiness out of it. And most of the Saisons have some kind of fruit or spice in it. So the warmer temperatures work well for a Saison and give you a nice fruity and a lot of get some spiciness out of it. But anyway, the fruity flavors that come from higher temperature fermentations go well with that style.
And is it like less expensive to have the keg than to keep buying bottles, or is it pretty much the same?
No, it is more expensive because you got to get CO2 and a regulator and the keg. But once you get that,
you don't have to get it again.
Well, 5 pounds CO2 for most people is going to last about a year.
Wow. So
you're $30 or $35 per year.
Okay.
And just it's much simpler to put it into 1 5-gallon keg versus 50 different bottles.
And you don't have to wash it. I'm looking over here at the bottle washer. I mean, you have to wash the keg, but you just have to wash the keg.
Right.
Now, if you're a home brewer and you have a keg, you don't have a keg washer. You just use...
Just put it on the spigot and hose
it down?
Yeah, hose it down and rinse it out and sanitize it and then put your beer in it.
That's cool. If the next time you're on a beer tour, if you can ask to see the keg washers, those are really cool. They're like the bottle washers. You just put the keg on top and it shoots water out.
So a lot of them, they just turn them upside down. They put the disconnect on it or the tap, turn it upside down, and then they run – cleaning solution that will evacuate any old beer that's there, run some hot cleaning solution through it, rinse it a couple times, and then we'll put more CO2 in it so that it's all ready to put beer in. So
very cool. And all right, so now up on our next story, we have a story I just didn't get. So Doug is going to tell the story, and then I'm going to ask questions.
I'll inform you.
Please, educate me.
This comes out of... Indiana, Bloomington, and it's part of a Indiana University researcher. The local brewery, I don't remember what the name of the local brewery was, but they were having problems. They'd lost 2 or 3 batches of beer in bottles because they didn't bottle condition. They're bottle conditioning their beer, which means it goes through another fermentation in the bottle. And usually they're 750 milliliter bottles with the champagne tops on them, but they had problems getting things to carbonate. So the researcher at Indiana University did some pH tests and found that because they were doing sours, the pH of the beer was very low, which normally is because that's where your tartness comes from, the sour beers that they were doing, and found out that the typical way of inducing yeast to have bottle conditioning wasn't working. So they found out that they had to precondition the yeast with malt extract, peptides, and some additional sugars. So they actually got the yeast, I guess, active rather than putting it in the bottle inactive and hoping that the yeast would come active and bottle condition or carbonate the beer. They were activating the yeast before they actually put it in the bottle so that it was active, and they actually had some with some of the beer, so it became accustomed to that beer and became active. And when they put it in the bottle to bottle condition it, it did work in bottle conditioned beer.
And so, and this is particularly useful for homebrewers, because if you want to do sours and you have bottles, this is a way to keep.
I had not heard of this issue before, but I understand what is happening is the yeast, just because it's the pH is down to about 3, where you probably would be somewhere 5 or between 4 and 5. It's just too acidic and the yeast didn't want to start.
Now, have you soured many beers? Is that something that you're into?
No, not much. I've done one batch, and I had so many follow-up issues with other batches becoming infected with that bacteria that I have shied away from that because it was a real pain.
Yeah, well, I guess that's one of the difficulties. It's funny, I was actually up at Fordham once, and they were talking about how Burley Oak has lots of sour beers on. And one of the guys was saying, well, how can they do it? And he's like, well, the upside of always having a sour on tap is you don't have to worry about that tap ever again.
Right.
Like, because as you were saying,
otherwise you'd have to clean it very well.
Yeah.
And with that, serving's not the issue. It's what happens with fermentation that the real issues are.
Oh, I see. So
the bacteria is hard to get rid of. I mean, there's several ways to produce sour beers, but most people use a farmhouse strain or a bacteria of some sort that takes a while for the sourness to come through. And a lot of times they actually are barrel aged. So it takes a while for that bacteria to sour the beer. But it also can contaminate a lot of your other equipment. So,
right. And so, and that's what the amount of scrubbing that you have to do is right. What makes it difficult. And if you're a home brewer and you don't have access to the caustic acid.
Well, yeah, but a lot of people who will do sours have two sets of equipment, one for the sour beers and one for regular beers.
So. I'll tell you what, you know who should do that? We were talking about the grain father last week. So I guess if you're a home brewer and you're going to upgrade to a grain father, which is an all-inclusive system, then you can start using your old system.
Well, it's not the brewing process. It's the fermentation.
Oh, so it's the carboys and...
Right, carboys and buckets and whatever you're going to ferment.
I told you I was so lost on this story. And so those, you have to have a separate one.
Right, and some of it's done. You can do it at primary. You can do it at secondary. But anything that you're going to use for when you're using the bacterial sour beers, you have to have separate, or it's easier, or maybe it's more safe to have a second set of equipment to use.
And so I guess one of the things that I didn't get originally from the story is that they must be adding the bacteria in the first fermentation because they're doing the secondary fermentation in the bottle.
Well, not yes and no.
Okay.
Yes and no. I mean, they may primary with a regular yeast and then put it into a tank, another tank, and put their beer in there, the culture for the sourness, or maybe they're kegging or putting it in a barrel for letting it sit for a while.
Right. But
there's all numerous ways. A lot of places will put it in a barrel, and then that barrel is already infected, so you just take your beer out to and you package that beer and follow up the next day or shortly thereafter with another beer in there. So you've already got the bacteria in that keg. So it's just continuously working.
Right.
That's like a lot of Belgian beers are the lambics. They're like 2 years old.
And they just keep using the same bugs.
Yep.
That's crazy. And also I guess they can use the same yeast, and maybe that's the difference. Maybe the yeast gets used to it after a while.
Sometimes it's multiples. There's a yeast plus bacteria. I know certain places in Belgium, the microculture, they let it sit out in the open, typically in a tower somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, and let it become infected. And the chemistry of the beer changes. So the yeast starts it, which then the bacteria and something else may take over as the chemistry of the beer changes.
That's
more
crazy.
Conducive to the subsequent organisms. It's one starts it, but it's wrong pH. The second one takes over when the pH changes, and the next one takes over when the pH changes.
Right.
Again.
And I guess that's one of the things. Like, I'm not crazy about sour beers, but I don't have them very often. But I guess that's what gives the sour beers their complexity, is that they change throughout.
And depends upon how sour and which bacteria you use and how sour it makes it. And
I'm not a fan of sour beers, but that's one of those. If IPAs are a sour wrecker, a palate wrecker, there's no telling what a sour is going to do. Like, if you drink one sour, that's what you're drinking today.
And you can use something. You can sour the beer in the mash somewhat, or use a different grain. We have a acidulated, which has some lactic acid on it already. You can use some lactic acid, so you don't have to use the bugs to create the acid. Then it's not as bad as having the bugs do the conversion, so your equipment's not contaminated, but it still has issues with how sour it is, and then with the yeast,
because it might just
bottle condition the beer,
because it might just taste off more than sour.
Right. Yep.
Very cool. And
so, true art making good sour beers.
Yeah, and the people there are people. There's one in Colorado, I think it's called the Funk Works, but there are some breweries that's what they do. They just specialize in making sour beers. And while we're on this, we don't have to talk a lot about this, but Sweetwater Brewing in Atlanta, which I almost certainly will go to this. I want to knock wood, but my friend has moved to near there. So
good reason to go.
Yeah. He's been traveling. His company got bought out. And so he's going and like making all the systems match. He's a computer guy. So he's converting one system to another system all over the country. So he moved there in, I don't know, let's say December, but he hasn't really been home yet. I just spoke with him yesterday and he's like, yeah, no, I'll probably be on the road till May. So hopefully this summer I'll get to go down to Atlanta and go to Sweetwater. But they're doing this as part of like a science.
I think it's just they said they had about 100 different festivals, and this was one of many one of the ideas that they came up with festivals. So it sounded very interesting, unique.
And then the idea is to do what we just did, essentially, which is to talk about the processes that make beer and let people know about it.
Well, I think with any hobby, you've got different perspectives on things, and you go, and if you have enough homebrewers, and the way I read it, they were having lots of homebrewers who had different presentations. I'm not sure whether the video or just doing one presentation over and over, but you get different perspective on things and try to decide how you want to do your own homebrewing.
Right, and I thought that's – I mean, we need a better camera and all of those things, but that's one of the things that we've been kind of talking about for maybe the last 2 years is to do these – if I could film Jesse's talk, or if Jesse could give, when you do these talks, I'd like to film them because people do want to know. People are interested in this. So it's just good to see that it's popular and catching on. And hopefully, we can do more things like that here in the future. And along those notes, the homebrewer event is June 3rd. Did I get that right? In Baltimore?
Yes. I think that's 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th.
Right.
Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Do you guys stay open for that?
Yes, we're going to be open, but we're going to also be going to the event to partake of some of the festivities.
That's cool.
And some of the education, too.
Now you're not going to have a tent there? You're just going
to
go?
No, we decided not to set up.
Right.
We had done that in Philadelphia 3 years ago, but decided we didn't get a whole lot of business from it, and it is pricey, expensive to set up and set up your wares.
Well, and I can imagine that, you know, like unless you're selling stuff there at like, you know, cut rate, you're not going to get a lot of people who see you in Philadelphia and then come to Laurel.
But the main ones who set up there are like Brickman, who makes the kettles.
Right.
They'll set up there so that the home brewers see it. And then we're a dealer, so we get the
benefit of it.
Right.
That's cool.
But our supplier, L.D. Carlson, I think set up Brewcraft, who we also deal with. They'll get the normal homebrew distributor setting up so that they show their wares so that they know what you can get at our place.
And now, is there a competition there? And like, is there a tasting competition there?
Yes, there is, and it's usually done ahead of time. You have to send it in ahead of time, and they'll announce the winners at the grand banquet.
That's cool. Do you know if any local guys submitted?
No,
is it common to submit to that, or?
Yeah, a lot of people do, but you got to send them in, and then they'll taste them and give the awards at the banquet.
Very cool. And I actually saw on Delmarva United Homebrewers website, have they decided whether or not they're going to do a competition in Dover this year or in Harrington? Do you know about that?
I've heard that they were looking for somebody who would be the main
coordinator.
Coordinator, yes. And the homebrew, the Baltimore event, Sam Caligioni is the keynote speaker.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. So I guess there will be a lot of local folks up there for hometown support. Very well. And as we're cruising into the station, one quick last story. Another big brewery from the West is coming east. Deschutes is coming to Roanoke. I you know what I didn't know? Only because I only had U.S. history or whatever. I didn't know how far inland Roanoke was.
Oh, it's way in the west part of Virginia. It's a long drive from the coast to.
Right. Well, I guess they did. How did the settlers get there? Did they take the James River, I guess, or one of the.
I don't think it's. I think it's beyond. It's over the mountains, I think. So.
Is it a different Roanoke from the disappeared colony? You know about the.
Well, I know that's Jamestown, though, wasn't it? Or close to Jamestown?
I thought so. So they must have been a different
one. Was in Western Virginia.
Yeah, that Western Virginia. Yeah. This one totally is. So I guess I'll have to look it up.
I was embarrassed. Roanoke Island.
Which is on the coast.
It's on the coast.
I was just very excited because I said, here's another Shore Craft beer that I can go and I can go and I can, you know, it would be a business trip if I drove down there. And then I went to look it up and it's not on the coast.
It's way out west.
Yeah. But still very exciting, for the people of Roanoke and the area. I didn't notice
about 100 people there.
Yeah.
To employ.
And that's
$85 million.
I guess $80 million must be the number for opening a major beer center. So why this is good for us is that we do hope to have a maltery here soon. So I mean, this is a huge brewery, but you know, hopefully every time a brewery opens, it's kind of good for the malt business here. Yeah. And if we could get into the wintertime grain business, I think it'd be great for the economy here. And again, it's outside of my 100 mile radius, so I'm not that. but it does give me an excuse. We have our friends from Tin Cannon, who were one of the few brewers that we were able to get on the podcast. We got that to work, and they're out that way someplace. So I guess it'll be good for them because a lot of these. I mean, it happens here at Dogfish for sure, but I heard it's happening in Asheville as well. The bigger breweries actually help the little breweries when they get to town.
Yes, that seems the way. And I just forget what was it? The
Fat Tire?
The Fat Tire that went to all the local breweries. Yeah, I think it was. They went to all the local breweries and said, we want to open up here in town.
Right.
But they're also allowing the local breweries to buy grain from them.
So they're doing like a cooperative thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, prices go down.
Right.
Prices go down for everybody,
prices go down.
Yeah, which is cool. So it's really kind of exciting. We got into it a little bit on the internet. Not a little bit, but you know, I took some cheap shots at Blue Moon, and I know that you don't hate Blue Moon as much as I do.
Well, it's Coors.
Right.
Which is now Miller's.
Which is now Miller, but it is a traditional. I got called out for claiming it wasn't a craft beer. But since it's traditionally a craft beer, and that's what the fight has always been about. But I mean, I'm still not going to drink it. But I will drink this when I go to Roanoke, and maybe
call it a sheep's and wolf's or
a crafty beer. Remember, that's what
crafty beer.
They're called a craft style beer. That's
a wolf in sheep's clothing.
Wolf in sheep's clothing. Absolutely. All right. So that brings us to the end of the show. So thank you so much for joining us. Remember, if you're in town. Tomorrow, if you're listening to this Friday or if you're listening to this Saturday morning, 2:00 Saturday here, Jesse Prawl from Rubber Soul will be giving a talk on
malts,
brewing malts. And is it like how to choose the malt and the characteristics and stuff like that?
And the base malts and the all the specialty malts.
Very cool. And you can find us on the internet at extremebrewing.com, either extremebrewing.com or extremebrewing.com. You can find me at Shore Craft Beer. I'm Tony Russo backwards on Twitter, where I'm meanest, and that is at OSSURYNOT. But if you come to Extreme Brewing, click on everything else. That will get you to the podcast site where you can get to all the rest of the stuff. And so until next week,
drink what you like and be happy.
All right. Thanks.
Beer with Strangers is recorded at Extreme Brewing in Laurel, Delaware. For more information about the show and for beer news and commentary, visit stateofthebeer.com, where you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes and follow along on whichever social network you're least likely to ignore. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week. The state of the beer is strong.